The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me on the program Crosswalk with Gino Geraci. It is, of course, the program where we typically take your calls and answer your questions about the things you care the most about, questions about God and the historical Jesus, questions about the Bible, worldviews, world religions. We talk about the past, which is history. We talk about the future, which is prophecy. But every once in a while, we talk about the here and the now. We have artists, authors, guests on. Joining me is Jeff Hunt from the Centennial Institute. And Jeff, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Listeners, you all are wonderful. Great to be with y'all.
Well, I'm so glad. I know you sent out an email blast a couple of days ago about this misnamed bill that's called H.R. 8404 or 8404, which has already passed the legislative branch of our government. It's been called Respect for Marriage Act, and in the email blast, you point out how they've cleverly included this idea of interracial marriage with the Obergefell ruling as if interracial marriage is at risk. And what it does is it officially repeals the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act. Tell us a little bit about why this is bad, why more than 80 Christian and faith-based groups have opposed it. Tell us why people are saying that this is an attack on people of faith.
Huge issue. I mean, this is a really big bill because we're going to face a whole nation of Jack Phillips-like issues if this passes. Mm-hmm. So it's called the so-called Respect for Marriage Act. It was passed with 3 hours of debate, no notice, no committee hearings, no discussions with faith communities, rushed through the House of Representatives. And we understood that those on the left side of the aisle were likely going to support this. It was very disappointing to see that 47 Republicans joined with them to vote for this. I don't think they understand the gravitas of this bill. So here's what it will do. It will essentially force every state to recognize whatever any other state deems as marriage. So if you have a state that says, listen, you know, we've decided that we have quote unquote evolved in our understanding of marriage, and we're going to allow for polyamorous relationships, right, allow more than two people to get married. Well, every state in the union then must recognize that as marriage. Now, if you are a quote-unquote state actor, okay, that's a broad definition, that you have some relationship with the state. If you decide that you are not going to uphold gay marriage, multi-person marriages, the state will then allow them for what's called private right of action. We see this in Texas around the abortion thing. So people can sue a quote-unquote state actor for not recognizing marriage. So what is a state actor? Gino, have you ever performed a wedding before?
I've performed literally hundreds over the last 30-plus years.
And did you ever say, by the power invested in me or anything like that, I declare you married? Well, that power is partially comes from the state, and therefore you are a state actor. And so ADF and a lot of these Christian legal organizations are looking at this very short bill. It's only two pages, going, this may open up every single person that acts in any type of a relationship with a state, whether it's marrying people, whether it's Christian-based adoption agencies, whether it's a Christian college, to possibly facing lawsuits by people independently of the government. So you can have literally a nation full of Jack Phillips-like situations. So that's one deep consideration. The other is that they can take away 501c3 tax status. The IRS could use this bill to go after Christian colleges and take away their nonprofit status. This should wake up everybody. All eyes on this. And now it hasn't passed the Senate. It needs 60 votes to pass the Senate. I spoke directly with Senator Ted Cruz about this bill. And he's concerned that there may be 10 Republicans that defect and vote with the Democrats on this bill.
Do you think
everybody to be contacting their senators on this.
Now, obviously, our senators in the state of Colorado, can you imagine if every single human being listening to this program and then more called them, they won't change their view. You saw that at with Colorado Christian University at the state legislature, where people pleaded for the unborn, and it fell on deaf ears. Do you think that? But should that dissuade people from calling the congressman, or are we in a sort of casting our pearls before swine situation?
No, you know, it does make a difference. Especially with regards to religious freedom protections. So they may disagree with us on the definition of marriage. I understand that. You have a conjugal view of marriage, which traditionally Christians hold. There's a revisionist view of marriage that the secular kind of parts of America embrace. I understand that, but there needs to be religious freedom protections. And if we can raise enough voice and speak into this, they may second guess this. And if we can get enough national conversation going, well, goodness, maybe the Republicans won't join with them and recognize that the single largest voting bloc in the Republican Party is evangelical Christians, that they don't all want to be persecuted as a result of this bill. I am shocked that Republicans joined in, because the Republican Party platform specifically recognizes marriages between one man and one woman, because Republicans and conservatives traditionally recognize that there are important institutions and that the institution of the family is worth protecting. We can put pressure and we can raise a national voice on this. And that's what those national conservative organizations are seeking to do.
One of the things that concerns me greatly isn't simply this issue. It is the criminalization of the belief that homosexual marriage is wrong. That it's wrong, that it's evil, that it's wicked, that it's corrupt. So imagine somebody like me on this radio program where I say, you know, something isn't marriage just simply because you call it marriage. Marriage, by definition, requires a covenant. Now, obviously, we're back to what I said earlier. Could this bill criminalize the belief that homosexual marriage is evil, wrong, and sinful? And if you say it out loud, you could be held criminally liable.
It's definitely in that direction. So it's a big step in that direction. And we've seen that with Jack Phillips, right? The Colorado Civil Rights Commission, everything that's happened in the state. We now have a new case, 303 Creative, that's going against this Colorado Civil Rights Commission. So the left is already trying to punish and intimidate people of faith that have held historically committed beliefs to the idea that a man and a woman in a committed monogamous relationship is what marriage is. But, you know, this is what's really important for everybody to understand. We're all talking about transgender issues right now, transgenderism in the classroom, the you know, 60 plus genders out there.
It's the poison pill.
We didn't just get here accidentally. We decided as a culture, not us as the church, but as the culture, decided to make marriage genderless as a result of Obergefell and the whole gay rights movement. They decided to make marriage genderless. We're now at a place where either gender is really important or it can be disposed of or you can switch it. We have no idea. We're lost. And you saw that movie, What is a Woman, by Matt Walsh.
Yes.
They can't define what a woman is. They can't define what marriage is. We are writing into federal law.
Jeff Hunt, can you...
Laws that are going to implicate people all over this country. We have no idea what we're talking about.
Can you stay with me one more segment?
I'd love to, Gino.
This is Gino Geraci along with Jeff Hunt from the Centennial Institute. Hey, welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me on the program. Joining me is Jeff Hunt from the Centennial Institute. We're talking about this tragically misnamed bill of that would seek to undermine and overthrow the defense of marriage. And you made a comment earlier that got me to thinking about Matt Walsh's new documentary, What is a Woman?, where it reveals that the failures of transgender ideology. But it also reminds me of what happened when Kennedy wrongly got the Obergefell or Obergefell versus Hodges decision. He argued rightly that marriage is an institution that's fundamental to society, so far so good, that protects and ensures the well-being of children, so far so good, essential for a flourishing society, so far so good. But to withhold that institution from same-sex marriages, he wrongly concluded would violate dignity and disrespect. He thrust marriage not into something that is civilizationally, institutionally tied to a man and a woman in a flourishing institution, but made it an ever evolving construct like the gender. So what I wanted to do is connect those dots for people. In other words, what this law would literally do is make marriage so malleable and pliable that it can mean whatever you want it to mean, thus endangering people who hold a different view.
Yep, that's exactly right. So there's a great book out there written by Robert George titled What is Marriage? And I strongly recommend that people go purchase that, because it gives you a sense of what's happened. So we have a revisionist view of marriage that's taken hold in this nation, that it's about two people, right? Two people that have love each other. And why in the world, Gino, would you want to get in the way of wanting to stop people from making a loving commitment to each other? Okay, so if that's your view of marriage, well, then it's going to change. It's going to evolve and stuff like that. What it totally ignores is the idea that it's an institution that produces families, and that's why marriage is so important. So, Gino, think of this. Every single human being in this world exists as a result of a male and a female getting together. There's no other option. There's male and female. They come together, and they produce a new life. Marriage says that new life ought to have both male and female, distinctly different and goodly, it's good that they're different, characteristics poured into that child in a lifelong committed relationship that then allows that child to grow up with both male and female influences in their lives, to grow up and to be the person that God created them to be. You miss all of that if you just believe marriage is just all about two people making a commitment to each other. And so we've lost the definition, and we're wandering as a result of it.
Well, and because it always denies a child either a father and a mother, what they do is, like in the pro-abort argument, they go to the exception. You know, they have a 10-year-old who is raped by an illegal alien, and they go, why would you force a child to conceive? And again, what they fail to do is, we understand that we live in a broken world. We understand that children are sometimes denied a father or a mother through death or disease or difficulty or divorce. But in an ideal situation for the flourishing of a child, why wouldn't the government sign on to an agenda that promotes rather than prohibits flourishing?
Right. And the question is, why does the government care? Right. The government doesn't really care about any of your other personal relationships. It doesn't care about your friendships. It doesn't really care about if you're having, romance with anybody. The government's not involved in that. Why does the government care about marriage? Because it's an institution that produces citizens. Right. And there is a good way to create that institution, and there's a bad way to create that institution. So not even just get past gay marriage. Look at just the brokenness we have with single parenting, right? We look at that and go, there are serious problems here. Single parents face tremendous challenges as a result of trying to raise a child by themselves. So what should the government do? Should it encourage that type of lifestyle, or should it encourage that dads be present in their kids' lives and invest in them? So that's why these discussions are important. But in the discussion of marriage, especially at the policy level, there is no even reference to the idea that there are children involved with this. They just move right past that. We don't talk about the parents or the children's rights to have a mom and a dad, to be able to access their mom and their dad, to be able to be raised by their mom and their dad, to know who they are, to be lovingly cared by them. We don't even discuss it. It's all about what two consenting adults do, and it just misses that entire component, which is very sad in my perspective.
One of the things that you talked about is, obviously, we as Christians do not oppose interracial marriage. We don't think there's any moral, religious reason to oppose interracial marriage. But we do have moral and biblical reasons to oppose homosexual marriage, because we think, like everything else, it's ill-defined, that it really isn't marriage, that it violates natural law. It denies a child a mom and a dad. And I'm going to go so far as to say, at least from my perspective, that it validates and promotes a lifestyle that is, I'm going to use the word unhealthy. That's the most charitable way that I can put it.
Well, and you're right that the left is trying to conflate interracial marriage with gay marriage, and there's not a single conservative organization that's in opposition to interracial marriage. We're not trying to organize anything. There's no law proposed on the books. There's nothing there. And so they are absolutely conflating this. But, Gino, to your point, I think Christians need to speak out on the notion of a right life, of good living, of a life to the full. And listen, I was very liberal. I tried everything under the sun that the world proposes to you, drugs and hooking up and all that stuff. And it was so empty to me. And I'll sit in these committee hearings and I'll hear from the other side that you just don't want me to be able to live the life I want to live. You don't want to, you're bigoted, you're hateful, you're all that stuff. I go, no, by the call of Christ in my life, must stand as a light to a true grace that changes your life. And you may hate me now. You may think that I'm awful. You may think that because I am calling you to live a biblical lifestyle, that I'm the worst person in the world. I hope one day when Christ reaches you, you're going to go, gosh, that guy was willing to stand for the truth. He might have been the only one in this culture that was willing to do it. But as we as Christians need to be able to be brave and bold on that and not scared to tell people that the gospel brings life and life to the full. It's a full grace. It's what Bonhoeffer got so angry about with the American churches. He said it was a cheap grace. You know, he was looking for a grace that totally transforms your life. And that's our message to to the LGBTQ community. We're not here full of hatred, but we're going to be prophetic and we're going to stand on the gospel and we're going to stand on truth precisely because we want you to have life to the fullest.
Now, Jeff Hunt, does the Respect for Marriage Act make any provisions for conscience protections for florists, cake
Zero.
Makers, or wedding chapels?
Not a single one. Not a single one. I mean, if this thing passes, you're going to end up with thousands of cases all over the country, like we've seen with Jack Phillips. And, you know, we end up winning because we actually know what the Constitution says, that you cannot prohibit the free exercise of religion.
Right.
But the left doesn't care. They're driving an agenda. And I think it's important for everybody really to understand that this is not about right or left. This is not about it is really, truly an attack on Christianity. That is what this is about. And we have to stand strong for our rights in this country. Because if we don't, they're going to continue to chip away with it. And your children and grandchildren are going to grow up in a country of fewer and fewer rights.
Jeff Hunt, Centennial Institute, thanks so much for being my guest. Yeah.
Gino, you are a gift to our state. God bless you, brother.
Thank you. Hey, welcome back. We had a great conversation with Jeff Hunt from the Centennial Institute. We were talking a little bit about, again, the overturning of this, what's being wrongfully called the defense of marriage, or, well, that's the old name for it. I guess the new name is the so-called Respect for Marriage Act, which is RMA. And again, it's called Respect for Marriage Act, but it's not respectful of people of faith. It's passed the House. It's now before the Senate. It would repeal the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act and would require the federal government to recognize any marriage if it's legally performed in any of the 50 states. And you might be thinking, well, why is that a problem? Why is that a problem? And of course, it's a problem because if a single state, I'm not suggesting that Utah is going to recognize polygamy as legal marriage, or even Michigan with its huge Muslim population. What if there's a growing group of people who say, in Islam, we have the right to have as many as four wives, and you are denying us our religious freedom? So imagine you are a Muslim or in Michigan, or a Mormon in Utah, and the state of Michigan or the state of Utah capitulates and says, we're going to recognize polygamy as legal. Well, the federal government would require all the states making polygamy the first domino to fall in a long list of dominoes as marriage continues to be redefined, perverted, and corrupted. You might be thinking, that's not possible. But guess what? There was a town in Massachusetts has already done this. And the state of Massachusetts was the very first state to recognize homosexual marriage in 2004. And so you're thinking, you mean it's plausible? I'm going to suggest to you that it is. And again, the Respect for Marriage Act goes further than the 2015 Obergefell decision by focusing, literally focusing on the LGBTQ community and thus men rendering marriage genderless. And again, as John Stone Street writes, this will harm children and further confuse reality. And in my conversation with Jeff Hunt, again, the so-called Respect for Marriage Act has zero, and I do mean zero, provisions for conscience protections. Legal action can be taken against florists, cake makers, wedding chapels, every single person who stands for biblical marriage. And so, 303-873-1935. You know, my friend Jim Dennison, at his column, which is posted at the Dennison Forum, the headline is How to Deal with Discouragement. And basically, he talks about two ways to deal with discouragement. He talks about focusing on temptation and doubt, and then he talks about discouragement. And of course, he says our first response is, well, expect it. Challenges and setbacks are a part of life, and sometimes even for people of faith. And then he says in Psalm 34, David testifies, those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. That's verse 10 of Psalm 34. However, verse 18 adds, the Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. So as I've pointed out repeatedly, the presence of a broken heart, the presence of feeling crushed, doesn't mean the absence of God. It might be one of the most powerful reasons to believe that God is near. And again, verse 19 captures the tension in verse 34, where it says, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of all of them. So while God's timeline may not be our timeline, the ultimate outcome is beyond doubt. In verse 22 of Psalm 34, it says, the Lord redeems the life of his servants. None of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. Jim Dennison rightly points out, we know how the story ends, but not when. So in the meantime, discouragement becomes a part of life. And so, again, I think about Hebrews chapter 10, verse 35. Don't throw away your confidence. It'll be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you've done the will of God, you will receive what he's promised. That's Hebrews chapter 10, verses 35 and 36. Perseverance is going to be rewarded. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 9, it says, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we don't give up. Galatians 6, 9. In John chapter 14, verse 27, Jesus, of course, says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. In Isaiah chapter 40, verse 31, it says, those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. The Lord renews the strength of those who hope in him. It's Jesus. It's Jesus who gives peace. And we will reap a harvest if we don't give up. And of course, perseverance will be rewarded. You know, when you get to be my age, sometimes you know more people in heaven than you do on the earth. But we have reason to rejoice. Some of you remember Paul's words in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16. We don't lose heart. Though outwardly we're wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. Our bodies age, but we can be renewed on the inside. And in Psalm 92, verse 12, it says, the righteous will flourish like a palm tree. They will grow like a cedar of Lebanon planted in the house of the Lord. They will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green. It's a metaphor, of course, about a plant, not about an ideological view of of Greenpeace or the Green New Deal. Isaiah 40:29, he gives strength to the weary, increases the power of the weak. Hang in there, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. 303-873-1935. I'll be back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Hey, if you'd like to join me on the program, it's 303-873-1935. Happy to take your call about God, about the historical Jesus, about the Bible, about worldviews, about world religions, and of course, about marriage. And of course, because we are who we are, and because we do what we do, and because what we try to do on this program is to evaluate everything in light of what the Bible says, what the Scripture says. So when we ask and we answer the question about what's the purpose of marriage, or is it necessary for a Christian to marry? What is the purpose of marriage? Well, it might come as a shock and a surprise to you, but the Bible has a whole lot to say on this subject. 303-873-1935. And of course, since the first marriage was between the first man and the first woman, it's assumed that marriage is God's will for most people. I'm going to suggest to you that there are people who, for reasons that I don't necessarily want to get into, that there's lots of reasons why people either can't or won't or shouldn't be married. But again, the overarching ideal seems to be that human beings are designed for marriage. And it was instituted in the dispensation of innocence, and therefore it's a holy institution. In other words, marriage doesn't come into existence after the fall, according to the Bible, but before the fall of humanity. Marriage isn't the consequence of acting out sinfully, but acting out according to God's plans and purposes. And so, again, I don't think it's an accident that the Bible begins with a marriage in the book of Genesis, and it ends in a marriage in the book of Revelation. Because that marriage of the Lamb and his bride, the church, becomes a type and a picture of a metaphor of a thriving friendship, fellowship, relationship. So the first reason that the Bible gives for the existence of marriage might seem overly simple to you. But according to Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, Adam was lonely and needed a helper. And so imagine that the primary purpose, according to the Bible, for marriage is fellowship, companionship, mutual help, and mutual comfort. And so, if that was the only reason, it would be enough. As the Hebrew people say, dianu. If it's sufficient. If this were the only thing, that would be enough, dianu. But one purpose of marriage is to create a stable home in which children can grow and thrive. Now, I'm going to suggest to you that the healthiest marriage is between believers. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14, that's why Paul talks about that marriage is that a believer shouldn't be unequally yoked. And so, it shouldn't shock you or surprise you that marriage is for fellowship, companionship, mutual help and aid, a stable home where children can grow and thrive. But also, please don't be offended that marriage in part exists to produce godly offspring. In Malachi, God tells the Jewish people, the Israelites, that he will not accept their offerings because they've been unfaithful to the wives of their youth. This shows how much God cares about marriage. And in part, it also demonstrates that God cares about the integrity of marriage. Not only that, he tells us that he's looking for godly offspring. 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join me on the program. It's a puzzling passage. It's been interpreted to mean, well, that godly offspring are the purpose of marriage, or that a good marriage between two godly people will mean that any children they have will tend to be godly as well, or God wanted the Jewish people, the Israelites, to be faithful to their wives instead of leaving them for foreign women, not just hoochie-coochie girls, but the foreign women, because in those mixed marriages, and again, I'm not talking about racially charged marriages. I'm talking about for the Jewish people that it isn't a racially driven motive to avoid marrying foreign women. It's because you need to marry believing women. For what purpose? Because imagine you're going to raise children in one of two ways. They're going to be godly or ungodly. Your children are going to be subject to idolatry of those nations. And again, I'm going to suggest to you that that's true of the United States of America. We live in a culture and a society given over to idolatry. Oh, it's not statues. It's not like it was in the time of Daniel, where you erect a statue and you bow down to it. But idolatry is anything, or an idol is anything, that preoccupies your worship, how you devote your life, how you live your life. And so no wonder God wanted to keep people from idolatry. And God himself was seeking his own offspring, that's the people, to exhibit godliness by their faithfulness. So if any of the, out of all of those interpretations about Malachi chapter 2, verses 13 through 15, there's this common theme that God wants faithful families to produce faithful children. So not only does marriage teach children how to be faithful and give them a stable environment, it also teaches them to learn and grow. It has a sanctifying effect on both marriage partners when they submit to the Lord. And again, for the Jewish people, as well as early on in the United States of America, the primary responsibility to educate children wasn't the government. The idea of government educating your children was unthinkable. Every marriage has difficult times and difficult challenges. And of course, when sinful people get married, sometimes sinful things happen. But I'm going to suggest to you that by and large, again, marriage is created in an atmosphere where husbands love their wives, where wives respect their husbands, that they love each other, they live selflessly, and they raise godly children. And of course, godliness helps us follow and obey what the Lord reveals to us. Is marriage helpful in promoting a godly lifestyle? It's supposed to. This is Gino Geraci. Thanks for joining me. I'll be back.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.